From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio this morning. Last podcast of the week prior to Ole Miss and Auburn, 11 a.m. Saturday from Jordan-Hare Stadium. Have coverage of that up on the site as it is concluded there on the plains. Today on the show, talk to somebody. We talk to every Friday, Ryan Brown coming in from Birmingham. WJOX, the Roundtable is where he can be heard every weekday. Ryan, again, joins us every Friday. Great football stuff on the heels of a really good football day yesterday. We got Chris Landry on the Beer Garden. Goes through tons of Ole Miss coaching surf stuff. I know sometimes everybody didn't listen to the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. Do it yesterday, as it's a lot of LSU where he, frankly, blows them up and then talks about Ole Miss's coaching search. So Chris Landry yesterday on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden.
Yes, even if you are one of the people who says, I only subscribe for Ole Miss stuff, I protest, I will not listen to the Beer Garden, no one's going to know. No one's going to know that you violated your protest rules. And I know you guys exist because I get your emails. No one's going to know if you violate your protest rules one episode and listen to this. It's 20 or so minutes of great LSU stuff that is a life lesson, frankly, for anyone ever. And then it's about 45 minutes of Ole Miss coaching search stuff where we get into just about every candidate we've talked about with the exception of Scott Frost. And Chris says Scott Frost isn't interested in the job, so there's really not a lot of reason, at least with Chris Landry, to discuss Scott Frost. It's detailed. If you're driving to Auburn, if you're driving somewhere today, it's a pretty good listen. It's mostly Chris Landry. It's very little me. I think you'll like it. So you don't tell anybody, and I won't tell anyone. You violated your protest rule, and I think you'll enjoy the podcast.
Also, another podcast up this morning, the Soft Verbal, presented by Billy's Pecans, our recruiting show. Russell Johnson navigating that. It is up, a lot of mailbag stuff, with a little bit of emphasis on Ole Miss's coaching search as well.
Yeah.
Where who would fit, where would things go, depending on the resume of said new coach in Oxford. So
we also talk about the players in Friday Night Lights, how they would be ranked by rivals.
Truly investigative stuff.
Damn straight it is.
On a more serious note, mentioned this on the board earlier in the week, if you can, please consider donating blood to the Mississippi Blood Services, any location of the Mississippi Blood Services, on behalf of Justin Reed, former Ole Miss basketball player, dealing with a type of cancer that, frankly, I'm having a hard time remembering right now. But either way, very, very severe. Started out in his spine. It has moved some other places. They got a pretty good report. The tumor in his heart had decreased the last time that they'd had a scan, but desperately in need of blood. Any type of blood works at any Mississippi Blood Services, give his name and then his code. His name is his code is DP57. D is in dog, P is in people, 57. DP57. There with any Mississippi Blood Services. And again, as we told you yesterday, we're going to talk to Emma Kent of the Tupelo Daily Journal next Wednesday. So if you don't want to be spoiled, if you care about that at all, go listen to her podcast. That's Open, the Case of Lee Ochi. On Wednesday, we're going to delve into that a little bit with her. So there's a little bit of a public service there. Again, playoff baseball going on, a lot of stuff. So we'll get to that, and we'll get to Ryan in a minute. But first, the Oxford Exxon brings you the podcast every single day. Highway 6 West in Oxford, Daiquiri Ribs, lunch specials for $4.99. And you got just a little more time to use that plenty card at the pump inside the station and get some cool stuff for the LSU game, potentially. They're going to have a giveaway for 4 tickets, VIP passes, and apparel. You're automatically entered every time you use the plenty card at any critical location in Mississippi. So get on that. And also, since you need a car, check out Clark Ford.
You do need a car, and you should get it at Clark Ford. 662-257-1900 is the number. You call the number. You ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey that you like the Cubs. That'll put him in a good mood. And then tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. He'll do that even if you're a Cardinals fan. He'll probably might not be as good of a quote, but regardless, you'll get a hell of a quote. And then it's up to you. You can let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our podcast, and that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. It's going to be right to the bottom line. There's not going to be any haggling. It's a great deal attached with a great vehicle, phenomenal customer service, service after the sale, everything you could want. You can have that, or you can go shop around, spend your holiday weekend. It's a holiday weekend for us because it's fall break. That's the reason I say that. You can spend your holiday weekend shopping for a better quote, or you can just take our word for it. And even better, at the end of the deal, say, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the Oxford Exxon podcast, on the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, or on the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. Any of those, $500 off the bottom line from Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Neil's already freaking out. Cubs a few hours away from starting their title defense for 2017.
I dreamt baseball last night.
And I actually believe you.
Oh, I did. I had this dream that Ben Zobrist turned on a fastball. Oh, my God. He's like a different dog.
He just brought me a toy as I was talking into the microphone.
Yeah,
he wants to tug.
He is addicted to tug of war right now. Zobrist hit a ball right down the right field line, and it was a home run. It hit the wall above the yellow line.
That is a home run.
One umpire went foul, and one umpire went fair, and then they went to review, and I woke up during the review, so I have no idea what happened, but it was a significant.
Ben Zobrist hitting baseballs an inch left or right, up and down, create your mood more than anything else that goes on.
That's a good point. That is a good point.
Last year, Ben Zobrist hits the ball just a little bit the other way, double play inning over, and the Cleveland Indians probably starting a title defense right now.
Whew, I tell you what, the Cleveland Indians look good.
I'm really excited for what I think is going to happen. Okay. I'm pretty pumped for a Cleveland-Houston series.
Oh, I know.
Really excited for Cleveland-Houston.
Francisco Lindor, Jose Altuve on the same field.
Drew Pomeranz making his first postseason start tonight against the Astros.
And no pressure, Drew.
Got the work cut out for him a little bit. I didn't realize he'd had quite the year. He has 17-6 for Pomeranz.
He had a phenomenal season.
I know wins and losses aren't whatever, but 17-6 said something.
Became a really big part of their rotation.
ERA around 3.3, I think. American League, pretty good.
No, he was terrific.
Yeah.
He was terrific. Houston jumped all over Chris Sale yesterday.
Yeah. Sale's quote was, "It was a really bad time to suck."
Yeah, well. You know, I actually thought some of the pitches that he threw were not bad. Mm-hmm. Houston's really good. Cleveland is just an exceptional football team.
Speaking of baseball, I saw this morning Craig Robinson, whoever that is, not real sure, Rob Nair, retweeted it, said that Cleveland's baseball team wore Wahoo caps for 72.8% of the regular season games in 2017. That's a 13% increase compared to 4 years ago when the commissioner had asked to be moved away from that logo.
I know this is going to shock you as someone who's around baseball a lot. Baseball players, perhaps more than any other segment of any population in the human sphere, are superstitious. If a baseball player believes that his team is winning because he is wearing a certain cap, they are not going to change that cap unless God himself comes down and asks them to change the cap.
You're saying dude would have had a problem if he was having a big day and he was expecting the little Indian cartoon man on his cap and they had the C thing on the front of his cap for that day.
I'm saying it's possible that a team would have revolted over something that trivial because that's how baseball players think. Baseball players are habit.
Is it
people.
The starting pitcher? Is it the kind of the veteran? Like who goes up to the manager and goes, "Look, Tito, got a little problem here. There's a C on that cap, and that's not what we're doing today."
It's across the board.
Where's my Indian?
You know this.
Where's Wahoo?
Yeah, if a team has a shrine inside the clubhouse that requires that each player do it a certain order, and they think that's why they're winning, no one's changing that. Certainly no commissioner. I'm telling you, the only being that might possibly be able to get them to change that would be God himself. And even then, I'm telling you, there would be a debate, and it would not be a unanimous decision in that clubhouse. So if they think they're winning because of Yahoo,
Wahoo,
then Wahoo is staying on the Hats, and Rob Manfred can go eat a bag.
Can you imagine how big of a head case superstitious clubhouse the Dodgers had during that streak?
Oh, no.
You got every dude doing some weird something.
Trying to figure out what the hell.
Yeah. Why is this happening?
Yeah, it's because it can't be that we're just hit a bad streak or we're not playing real well right now. There's some cosmic thing.
We're going to need chickens. We're going to need candles. We're going to need a lot right now.
That's why that movie is so good.
It's right.
The pitching coach comes out. We're dealing with a lot of stuff right now. I mean, we need a chicken.
A chicken.
We're trying to figure out what's a good gift.
Wedding gift for Millie.
Yeah, wedding gift for Millie. Because, well, you know, we'll work on the chicken. Candlesticks. Candlesticks always make a good wedding gift. All right, let's get back at them.
Let's turn two.
It's just baseball players. It's a long – think about it for a minute. They get together in the middle of February and go through 6 weeks of spring training, which they hate because it's 4 weeks too long. Then they play a six-month season, 162 games, 20 days off. These people are in locker rooms, planes, hotels, buses with one another all year. It's a hard game. There's no game that's harder. I'm not about which game is best. There's nothing harder than trying to hit a round ball traveling 90-some-odd miles an hour moving with a round bat. There's just nothing harder than that. And you go through streaks where it's going great, and you go through streaks where you can't hit jack, and you're freaking out and all that stuff, and it's just a different deal. There's nothing more ripe for superstition than baseball. You never hear about superstitions in football.
No, not really.
In basketball. When was the last time we heard about a basketball superstition?
Football doesn't play enough games for superstition.
Right. And in basketball, yeah, you might get a guy that I have to dribble the ball four times and spin it to shoot my free throw. But you don't hear about team superstitions.
No, because that's the equivalent of the dude that always has, you know, like Garcia Pereira walking, you know, stepping out of the box and having to redo his gloves 12,000 times playing pitches.
Yeah, you have.
It's more of a tick than anything else.
Yeah, you have ticks, exactly. But you don't have team superstitions where we have to wear the same jersey. Like Cleveland wears that blue jersey at home and on the road everywhere. It's their worst looking jersey. Their white jersey with the Indians.
Nice.
Oh, it's. I mean, navy blue, red, white with whites. It's
really hard to mess up.
It's great looking. And their road gray is nice. Their blue jersey is not a particularly good look. It's kind of plain. It just has the one little thing on it. That's what they wear. Because they think it's what's making them win. It has nothing to do with the fact that they have so many elite pitchers and Francisco Lindor is a freak and the second baseman's incredible. It has nothing to do with that. It's because of the uniform.
Did a little poll last night. I was more just sitting there. I was kind of flipping myself, so I was curious what people were watching. There was no wrong answer. I got a lot of other people going, well, I'm watching something different. I was like, well, that wasn't really the point. I understand. Pat's Bucks, NFL Thursday night game last night. Patriots won. Again, didn't look very good, but won the game. Poor kicker for Tampa Bay is going to be cut today. Yankees-Indians, obviously, and then NC State-Louisville. From a television standpoint, you had ESPN for the college football game. You had NFL Network, MLB Network for the other two games, so it's a little bit – you had to factor that in probably a little bit, but anyway.
The baseball game was on FS1, right?
Oh, it was FS1, not MLB Network. So. Yeah, sorry, it was FS1. You're right.
The earlier game was on MLB Network.
Was it? I didn't even watch a pitch of that. So, anyway, 44% last night of my Twitter audience that voted, NC State Louisville, 28% tie between NFL and MLB.
Surprised.
Not as big as it would have been in Alabama. But
no, surprised, yet not surprised.
Yeah, that's about what I thought it'd be a little closer than that.
NFL ratings are down. NFL interest is down. It's some of it is the anthem thing. Some of it is what Ryan Brown talked about a little bit. It's kind of boring. I don't know what my kids are doing upstairs. Someone's like trying to go through the floor.
I think they're practicing professional wrestling moves is my guess.
Good grief.
Everybody's home today?
Yeah, there's no school today. Fall break.
Why is it fall break?
Why does the sun rise in the east and set in the west? It's fall break.
It's 87 degrees outside.
It's hotter than hell.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's not fall. So they get 2 days now, but then they have to go 2 days during Thanksgiving, right? Give the week of Thanksgiving then and give them a full week.
Yeah, I think they go like Monday or Tuesday of that week. Don't hold me to that, people. I don't know. I'm along for the ride for the most part.
You don't really set the tone around here?
I do what I can.
Okay. You walk the dog.
I do walk the dog.
All right, we're going to move to Ryan in a minute. A lot of stuff with him. We're going to talk a lot about Ole Miss and Auburn. We're going to talk a lot about LSU and Florida because I just find the game fascinating, as ugly as that game is going to be on Saturday in Gainesville between, frankly, two really, really weird football programs at the moment. But, well, two weird teams. Florida's not a weird program. They're actually quite stable, as weird as their team is.
LSU's a weird program.
LSU's weird.
They're stuck with him probably for at least another year. He gets to do a lot of damage in another year. And I'm going to say this. I'm a Louisiana boy. I grew up in Louisiana. I can remember. I never cheered for LSU, but I always followed them because I lived in the state. I've seen LSU fail.
DeNardo, Hallman.
Hallman. I've seen LSU be really good. But I've seen them fail. And when everyone goes well, anyone could win there. They do that with Alabama, too. My response? True.
Saw Mike Shula.
I saw Dennis Franchione have a good year. I saw Mike Shula have a good year. But I've seen people fail at those programs. Now, Nick Saban won big at LSU, and Nick Saban clearly is winning big at Alabama. But he's Nick Saban. Nick Saban doesn't grow on trees, thank God. So, this LSU thing, the part that no one's getting into right now because we're so hung up in the right now drama, is a lot of damage can get done to this program over 2 years where you look up and you go, what is this?
I get what you're saying. Is he coaching the regular season finale in 2018?
I've told you this all along. No.
Okay. I understand what you're saying. I know where you're getting it from. I'm just saying when it gets down to it.
They're going to fire him at some point next season, and they're going to have to give him a whole lot of money. And
but they're going to do it.
Yes.
Because they're going to fire Joe Oliva too.
Yes, because at some point the damage is done. Listen, I can't recommend two things enough to you. One, Chris Landry has a podcast. If you just don't want to listen to me, you say, I'm not listening to Neil's non-Ole Miss podcast. Fair enough. Go to Landry Football. The Landry Football Podcast, where he has a podcast called The Rise and Fall of the LSU Football Program. It is incredible. It is so good, and Chris is inside it. You get inside stuff that you never get anymore because of how buttoned up all of these schools, LSU and Ole Miss included, are. Then, when you get through with that, you should listen to more of Chris on The Beer Garden. You really should. Again, no one has to know. You ought to listen to it. He talks about the Ole Miss search, some of the dynamics with the Ole Miss search, and this is coming from someone who's actually talking to the people. Chris knows all these people. Chris knows Frank Wilson. He knows Chad Morris. He knows Scott Frost. He knows all of these people.
His opinion's pretty educated.
Yeah. His Chris is someone who talks to Jimmy Sexton.
Yeah.
He talks to agents. He knows the people. He's often hired as a consultant to help a little bit behind the scenes with figuring out who might or might not be interested. It's pretty enlightening. And there's beginning to be some rumblings, and this is great news for Ole Miss, some rumblings that this NCAA ruling is going to come down mid to mid-early November. I mean, I hate to pin myself into a period, but right now, if you made me guess, and if I'm wrong, y'all can yell at me, it's an educated opinion right now that by November 15th, which for Ole Miss is great news. It means that if that's the case, no matter what the penalty is, you're going to be able to go while you still have some time to these prospective coaches and say, okay, here's our set of facts. Now, the set of facts might really piss you off, but you're going to be able to go. There's not going to be any unknown. Here's precisely what we as a program are looking at. And as Chris says in the Beer Garden, corresponding to that, here's why we're going to give you what we're going to give you. Here are the promises we're going to give you. Here's how we're going to take care of you. Here's how we're going to make this. Here's how we're going to navigate our way through this using your vision, coach.
Yeah. Check it out. You can find it on iTunes, anywhere you listen to podcasts, or at the site at rebelgrove.com. We go to Ryan, take the part of the podcast brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding areas. Also, all of North Mississippi for skeeter beaters, a way to get rid of those pesky mosquitoes and enjoy your backyard space. You get a free quote, 662-607-7773 or mastercutslawn.com. And when you sign an annual contract, mention the podcast. First cut is free.
Podcast also brought to you by Captain John Fryer and Tuna Chaser Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions from 4 to 12 hours. He knows where to put you on the fish that you want to catch. A popular trip for visitors who don't have a lot of time but want to make a trip is an inshore trip for speckled trout, triple tail. You can reach John through his website, tunachasercharters.com, his Facebook page, or you can call John, 228-348-7817. Podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for AC repair. You can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer's an American Standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane, 662-832-8749. Podcast also brought to you by Vitamin Hydration Therapy, 3010 Old Taylor Road in front of the Faulkner Flats Apartments. It's next door to Lapel's Dry Cleaning. Vitamin has the same IVs and shots as before, but they've added the cryosauna, the infrared sauna. They still have the overserve treatment. You can combine that with the cryosauna, help with inflammation that's causing those headaches. They have a smoothie bar, all natural foods, no added sugar. It's locally sourced. Same number as always, 662-638-3600. They're open Tuesday through Sunday, IVs and shots Friday through Sunday. Call ahead. Make sure there's someone there to take care of you, or send them an email, info@vitamend.com.
Now to Ryan Brown on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Ryan, welcome into the show. Once again, thanks for joining us on a Friday morning. This Friday morning, it's not like every other Friday morning. Your Nationals, my Cubs, squaring off in a National League Division Series. I will say this. Last year on day one of the Division Series with the Giants, I was a nervous wreck. The Cubs had won 103 games. I thought this was their best chance ever to win a World Series. If they didn't win one that year, they might never win one. There's a lot less dread this year. I know I'll get emotional about the series. I'll get into it. I'll probably have some bad Twitter moments. But at the same time, I'm kind of cool. I'm okay. Last year, I was not cool and okay. So it's better this year.
Well, I'm glad it's good for you. I don't know what expectations I can have. We're in the boat you were in last year. This is by far and away our best chance to ever win one. But look, the Nationals have zero success in the postseason. The best we've ever done was in that game five against the Cardinals when we're up 6-0 and blow that lead and the Cardinals go on to the NLDS. So to play the Giants, that's the best we've ever done. So, I don't know what kind of expectations I have. Here's what I would say, Neil, for Cubs fans. Wouldn't you think winning a world championship in back-to-back years would so diminish the feeling of winning that first world championship last year? It would almost cheapen that first one, wouldn't you think, as a Cubs fan?
I would think not. No, I would think that it
no,
would.
No, I mean, you waited your whole life for that first one, Neil. You don't want to cheapen it by doing it back-to-back times.
You know, it's like when you go to a great dinner and the dinner is phenomenal, and you order and you order the after-dinner drink that is just perfect.
Right.
It accentuates it in a way that makes it unforgettable. I think we're looking. I think we're looking for that perfect after-dinner drink.
Well, see, you're keeping it right there, though, because you're calling the second championship nothing more than an after-dinner drink, not the Wagyu ribeye that you just had for dinner.
See, he's already cheapened it. That's what
instead of the instead of the $115 piece of beef, you're worried about the $18 cocktail.
It's going to be a phenomenal cocktail. I love alcohol, Chase. There. So let's talk about this real quick. We're going to get to football in a second. I'm amused at both the Cubs and the Nationals trying to diminish the hamstring issues of Jake Arrieta and Max Scherzer, respectively. Because I look at this and I say, who's the Cubs' best pitcher when he's healthy? Jake Arrieta. Who is the Nationals' best pitcher when he's healthy? Max Scherzer. Jake Arrieta, neither the Cubs nor the Nationals have played a game since Sunday. They both clinched in plenty of time to set up their rotations. The fact that Max Scherzer is not pitching for Washington tonight and Jake Arrieta is not pitching for Chicago tonight is, to me, 100% indicative of the fact that neither are healthy as of Friday. Both teams are talking about Scherzer maybe pitching Monday, Arrieta maybe pitching Tuesday, assuming the series goes to four games, which I think it almost certainly will. The fact that they're not healthy on Friday means that they are at the very most iffy early next week. Hamstrings don't heal in 2 days. They take weeks. So it's amusing to me that both teams are trying to diminish that. I know it's a little bit of head games and stuff. I think there's a real chance in this series that neither Max Scherzer nor Jake Arrieta are effective at all.
Well, that'd be very disappointing. You know, because Scherzer, I mean, he may be the Cy Young winner. He probably will not win it, but I do think you have to consider him.
He would have my vote
this year. So, you're right. If you're going to start anybody, it's going to be Scherzer. He can be, when he's on, the most dominant pitcher in the game. I mean, he's a guy that can strike. He won't do it in the postseason, but he's a guy that on a given night can strike out 20 guys. He's done it. I would say this for Strasburg in the second half of the season, he's the Cy Young. I mean, I don't know that anybody's been better in the second half.
Did you see this?
That zero doubt.
The two most effective analytics, the two most effective pitchers in the National League in the second half of the season was one, Steven Strasburg, and two, Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, and they're going tonight.
Yeah.
I would take Strasburg. I am not upset about that. You know, I hate that the Nationals injured their way into this rotation. But on the surface, if everyone were healthy, this rotation doesn't upset me at all because you've got Scherzer ready for a game three, first game on the road. If you lose a game, you know, he can bail you out on the road. And the off chance you sweep the first two, he's going for the sweep. All those things. But you're right. If he were healthy, he's pitching game one tonight, and the same of Arrieta. That's frustrating to me. Absolutely it is. And, I mean, I haven't followed the Cubs as closely now, so I don't know about Arrieta. But Scherzer's injury happened in game 161. I mean, he's not been perfectly healthy in the second half. He missed some starts because of a neck tightness. But his hamstring was in game 161.
Yeah, Arrieta.
I mean, that's a pretty frustrating time.
Jake Arrieta was the National League Pitcher of the Month in August. He was phenomenal, and he tweaked it in his very first September start at Pittsburgh. He's come back and had one good start, one completely ineffective start, missed his last start, was going to have a sim game on Wednesday. They scratched that, and this is kind of my point. And the Nationals did the same thing. Arrieta was supposed to have a sim game, and they said, no, we're just going to work in the bullpen. He'll get better work. And the Nationals were going to have Strasburg pitch off a mound, and then they said, we're just going to throw off flat ground. It's better work. In other words, both guys don't feel right. So you're gambling that the adrenaline and such is going to carry them through a start on Monday or Tuesday, when the reality is, there's a decent chance that the adrenaline and such is going to force them to really aggravate the injury Monday or Tuesday. If you told me one or both of those guys went from having a tweaked hamstring to a pulled hamstring Monday or Tuesday, second inning of their start, I'm not remotely surprised. That's just that they're competitive people, and hamstrings for pitchers, especially guys like Scherzer, guys like Arrieta with these big, strong legs, and that's where they get their power from. Guys like that, if they're not healthy, they're not effective.
No, it's definitely frustrating. I mean, you play a whole year, and you get down to, for us, game 161 and lose maybe the best player on your team. Or maybe not lose him, but you lose his full effectiveness. I mean, that's brutal. I mean, that's tough. And really, you go into this series for the Nationals and your two best players, I don't even know what you're going to get. I got no idea what you're going to get for Scherzer, and I certainly have no idea what you're going to get from Harper. And that's the Nationals' two best players. So
I know what you're going to get from Daniel Murphy. Daniel Murphy's going to hit about 800 because he kills the Cubs no matter what uniform he's in. All right, before we turn to football, give me your series pick. Who and in how many games?
Probably a homer pick. I'm going to take the Nationals in five. I think it'll go the full five, but I'm going to take the Nationals in five. How about you? Cubs in five?
No, I've got Nationals in five. I think it does go five, and I think Strasburg at home in game five gets it done. I actually think it's going to be a really, really fun series. I'll be surprised if it's not.
Do you think the Dodgers, I mean, the Diamondbacks own the Dodgers in the second half. Do you think the Dodgers come out of the other side?
I don't. I think Arizona wins that series. I have Arizona in the World Series.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. As good as L.A. played this whole season, really, but especially the second half, for that one team to give them fits, that is a bad draw for them.
Well, Arizona went out and made that deal at the break for J.D. Martinez, and it completely changed their lineup.
So, Ryan, switching to football, start with Ole Miss and Auburn. I've been just all up into stats all week, really kind of obsessed with them from an Ole Miss and an Auburn standpoint, and I'm having a hard time finding any that gives Ole Miss a lot of a shot, not really to win the game, but to be in it in the fourth quarter. What's kind of your thought? If this game is close, what does it have to look like?
Well, I'll tell you this. Auburn, you know, one thing – going against Alabama last week, you knew you weren't going to get a lot of turnovers. And Alabama hasn't turned the ball over since the Iron Bowl of last year. It's the longest college football streak in 20 years. So you knew as Ole Miss you were going to have to be perfect because Alabama probably was not going to give you extra possessions, and they did not. Auburn at times this year has done that. They've turned the ball over. As a matter of fact, against Mercer, turned it over five times. So I would say that's your one hope if you're Ole Miss because, I mean, look, as bad as Ole Miss played Saturday night, they're better than Mercer. And I know Auburn's going to play to a higher level than they played against Mercer. Don't get me wrong. But Auburn turned it over five times against Mercer. That's a 24-10 game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. So Auburn showed in that game, even as good as their defense was, and Mercer did very little all day on that defense, obviously, as good as their defense was, if they're not, you know, if they don't take care of the football, teams like that can play with them. So, yeah, I mean, if you're plus 3, 4, 5 in turnovers, Ole Miss, you got a shot there. There's no doubt about that. Auburn's not good enough to survive that many turnovers. If you're pretty few teams, I don't know that any team is. I would say defensively, Ole Miss is going to get a lot of what they got last week. This Auburn defense is every bit as good as Alabama's and can do the same things Alabama does. So, you know, defensively, this is going to be a lot like, I think, what Ole Miss saw last week at Bryant-Denny Stadium.
Good grief. I mean, they haven't converted a third down yet.
I know. Auburn's really good. Kevin Steele, man, that guy, he's been coaching forever. Kevin Steele has, and he's been to a lot of stops. But that guy knows how to coach defense, man, and he's got that defense playing really well. They're really good on the corners. They're good on that defensive front. You know, they don't let you run the ball on them either, just like Alabama. So it's a tough spot for Ole Miss's offense again.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss was 0-13 last week on third down. The only team in the nation this season to have a longer or a game without a first down and more chances was Georgia Southern against Auburn early in the year. That was it. So They went 0 for 15. I mean, if you're Ole Miss, it almost seems like you just throw the ball down the field, and if that gets you killed, it gets you killed. But it's the only way you're going to win. You're not going to drive. And I was surprised by this stat, Neil. You and I talked about this during the week. We were completely wrong.
Okay.
Shea Patterson, sixth in Power 5 in throwing the ball when the ball travels at least 11 yards. Downfield passing, Patterson's ranked sixth out of Power 5 quarterbacks in the league.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, but and Chase, so to do that, so if I turn it over, at least I turn it over 25 yards downfield, right?
There you go. See, there
I
you
mean,
go.
Maybe it's, yeah, maybe it's not a punt, but it's also not a scoop and score. Now, Auburn did return one against State for a touchdown last week, but, you know, they're obviously not going to do that on every interception. So, yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, maybe you just try to push Auburn deep and see if you can hit a home run ball or two. And I don't know. I mean, Ole Miss is – look, they're the outmatched team. They're going to be in that situation a lot this year. So when you're in that situation, sometimes you just got to throw caution to the wind. And I know this goes against everything coaches do. Like, Matt Luke is a good coach. I know that. And Matt Luke has been raised doing football the right way and coaching football the right way. So it goes against everything the coach does to say, look, what do we have to lose? Because by and large, these coaches are really conservative people that do not like to take risk or uncalculated risk. But you're really in a situation. What in the world do you have to lose? I mean, if you're Matt Luke, you're probably not going to get this job. If you're Ole Miss, you're not going to the postseason. I mean, really, what do you have to lose? Why not just play, throw caution to the wind and play wild and loose and free and see what happens?
I'm with you. It can't get worse than it was last week. I mean, realistically, you're probably not going to lose by 64 or more. So let it hang out. But this is a guy who
– yeah.
This is a guy, like you said, this is a guy who's a conservative, hard-nosed. I know he coached with Hugh Freeze and stuff. I get it. But that's not who he is. He's a David Cutcliffe disciple.
Yep.
He subscribes to that theory of coaching, and that's not a knock. David Cutcliffe still coaching and making a lot of money coaching football and doing a hell of a good job at a place like Duke. But that's who Matt Luke is, I think. He's – in an ideal world, I don't think Phil Longo would ever – this is the unfortunate part for Matt Luke. If Matt Luke were the head coach at fill-in-the-blank State U, the last person – this is not – and this isn't a knock on Phil Longo, the human being, but the last type of offensive coach he would hire is Phil Longo. That is never what he would do. Never. Not in a gazillion years would he run that system. And so here he is in his 1 year in this dream job, and Hugh Freeze, among the many things that Hugh Freeze has left, is he left that as his offensive system, and it's just it's got to be totally foreign to Matt Luke's DNA.
And I'll take it one step further, Neil. You are, I think, in a situation – now, look, I don't follow Ole Miss on a day-to-day basis, so I'm going to talk in generalities here. You are in a situation where it would be really easy, if it hasn't already happened, to lose a football team, to where guys are just like, what? I mean, what are we even doing, man? And to me, if you go into a game and say, guys, we're going to throw caution to the wind, we're going to throw everything at them, at least maybe your team buys into that, right, and said, hey, at least we're trying to win games, man. We're doing everything we can to win games. We ain't got anything to play for. We're trying to win games on the road in the SEC. I mean, to me, maybe it keeps your team balled in a little bit.
The one that sticks out when we mention this, where I actually saw a team do this, and now they screwed it up later because they got freaked out about the quarterback situation. But Ed Orgeron against LSU and Baton Rouge, 06, 07, whatever year it was.
Ole Miss Ed Orgeron.
Yeah, Ole Miss Ed Orgeron. They're beating LSU the entire game. On the last play of regulation, Jamarcus Russell hits Dwayne Bowe in the end zone to tie it. Ole Miss blocks the extra point. They go into overtime and lose. But Orgeron ran trick plays. He aired it out. I mean, it was the strangest play calling game I've ever seen, but it worked just because for one day the kids played for Ed and it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and this may look. I mean, that may be a one game deal. You may not be able to do that the rest of the season. And Auburn may not be the place you choose to do it. I don't know. I'm just saying, at some point, I think you've got to do that. And look, these coaches, like, I mean, you watch the NFL. It's the worst about it. I love the NFL. But the NFL coaches are so risk adverse. For a lot of reasons, Tampa aside, they know they've got a field goal kicker that's money inside of 50. So they play so conservative when they get down in there They don't take any chances, and it turns into boring football. But college coaches can't depend on their kicker as much, so they can't be quite as risk adverse. But by and large, I'd say 95-96% of coaches are risk adverse, and they don't like playing games that way. It's just not the way they were raised. But I think in the case of Ole Miss, it's the only chance you've got of winning.
See, this is the thing that if I'm an Ole Miss fan and I'm obsessed over this season, the one thing that alarms me the most from Saturday against Alabama was that they didn't quit. That's not what the quit product looks like. They played hard the whole game.
Yeah.
That would, if I'm an Ole Miss fan, I mean, that alarms me.
Yeah. The only evidence, and I'm not trying to hammer this kid, I'm just saying the only evidence of quitting was lodged on that pick six by Levi Wallace. I mean,
yeah.
He checked out of the play.
Yeah, just for,
but,
I mean,
you know,
right, wrong, or indifferent. We asked Jacob Peeler about that on Tuesday. He said Lodge thought the ball hit the ground. Just strictly.
Okay, and
whatever.
That's fine. And that's what I'm saying. That was the only evidence. That was the only thing I looked at and thought, you know, wow, has Ole Miss tapped out of this? But I'm with you. I mean, the rest of that game I watched, I didn't notice it. Shea Patterson played his tail off as long as he could. He didn't have anything going. You know, hey, by the way, Ole Miss had a 100-yard rusher against Alabama. Do you know how infrequently that happens? And if you had told me when we did this interview last week, okay, Ole Miss has a 100-yard rusher, I would have thought, well, they might have something for Alabama.
Hey, I shouldn't do this to you, but you would know better than I would. Have you heard any rumors about something happening in Knoxville last night, early this morning?
I have not, but I have been incredibly tied up over the last 24 hours.
Okay. If it's true, you'll have a free radio show.
Maybe a coaching change?
Yeah, there's a rumor about something happening. It's on our board. I don't know if it's true or not. If it's true, you'll have a free radio show. Not that you'd need a free radio show on Fridays in Alabama, but
50 minutes ago, Brent Hubbs said that he did not believe it to be true, but we'll see.
Okay.
Take a break in our interview with Ryan Brown to tell you about Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com, the creators of Sildenafil, the parent company of Right Way Meds, where they will deliver to you. One of the things they'll deliver to you is that Sildenafil. Just head on over to Tyson Drugs, fill out the form, or give them a call, 662-252-2321. Give them your doctor's name. They'll get the prescription ready and deliver it to you if you are not local. Again, it is the $10 better version of that $50 or $60 little blue pill, same length of effectiveness, and gets you ready in as little as 15 minutes for your big day ahead. So, again, TysonDrugs.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan, located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Fantastic lease deals. If you're driving 15,000 miles a year or less and you want to drive a brand new car and pay $19.90s prices, check out the lease deals at Grenada Nissan. Go in, test drive one today. Tell Gene and Sandy you heard about it on the podcast. You heard about it at rebelgrove.com. You get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB is locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you all the comfort of home, all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you want, all with the personal touch. OUB is offering one-year CDs, 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With the three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out LiveOxford, BankOxford.com, or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast is also sponsored by Michael Oswald. If you're looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael a call. He's a realtor. He specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Go to his site, gotland.com. That's got-land.com. If you're a buyer, Michael Oswald has the biggest land inventory in Mississippi. There's a reason for that. People like to list with Michael Oswald with Tom Smith Land and Homes. If you're thinking about selling, if you're on the fence, if it's in your future, he'll come to your home, tell you what he does, market your property, and he'll get it sold for you. He will put his money where his mouth is. He's ready to work for you. He'll, whether it's drone videos, whatever it takes, Michael will put his money where his mouth is and get your property sold. 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. Now back to the Oxford Exxon podcast and our interview with Ryan Brown.
Okay, well, here's the thing I'll say, and I'm talking blind about this because I really don't even know what the rumor is, but I thought Butch Jones surviving Sunday means he's going to survive. I don't know how long he's going to survive, but if you were going to fire him, you'd have fired him Sunday.
Well, this was an external factor that would have forced their hand.
Yeah. I really did. I honestly thought we were to the point that Sunday morning we would wake up to Butch Jones being fired. I mean, I don't know what more you need to see. You're 5 years in. And a coach that's 2 years in just pasted you at your home place. So, you know, I kind of thought you would actually wake up Sunday morning to that news. But once he survives Sunday, now you start letting external factors in, and it's a whole different ballgame.
So before we move on to other games, you lay in the 21 with Auburn?
I think I would, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this offense has been good the last 2 weeks against Missouri and Mississippi State. Missouri is the worst team in the SEC, maybe. State's defense has been exposed a little bit over the last 2 weeks, but Ole Miss's defense is not very good. And Auburn, you know, of all the negatives of Gus Malzahn, when he knows he can run the football on you, he runs the football on you.
Yeah,
That's it. Let me say this real quick. They're up the middle runs. Like, if you look at the main ball carrier, the feature back, their yards per carry have not been good this year for Auburn. Their runs up the middle have been really shaky. Now, you'll look last week at Kerryon Johnson's number, and that'll say an opposite. But don't forget, he had like a 65-yard run on the first possession. You take that away, and it's still a concern. So the runs up the middle haven't quite been there for Auburn, but they've, again, kind of like the Nationals pitching rotation, they've injured themselves into a different offensive line rotation. And a lot of people think that the change they made at center with Casey Dunn, the Jacksonville State transfer going in, has fixed some of their offensive line woes. So we'll see. But Auburn, I think, should be able to run the ball. Normally, if Gus Malzahn can run it, Gus Malzahn is fine.
Yeah, it just comes down to third down on both sides for me, because Jared Stidham's kind of middle of the pack and just okay in most things. He's really good on third down. Ole Miss has had all the trouble on third down. And then I said this earlier in the week, Ole Miss's defense, they give up over 7 yards a carry on third down runs, Ryan. Get blitzed on third down.
Amazing.
Yeah, it really is. So
normally, believe it or not, where you want Auburn is like third and short, because they become really predictable. They go to the Wildcat a lot, and you know what's coming. When it's third and five plus, that's when Malzahn can come up with a few things. And Stidham has been really good the last three games. He got off to a shaky start this season as he shook the rust off, but his numbers, his efficiency, they have been really, really good the last three games.
So what's your kind of thought overall on this game, LSU at Florida on Saturday?
Man, this is a tough one. LSU is a total mess. I know this will come as a huge shock to Ole Miss fans, but Ed Orgeron clearly is overmatched in this LSU job. He's already meddling with it's almost as if they didn't see what happened at Ole Miss, right? I mean, it's almost as if Joe Oliva didn't even realize he had been the coach at Ole Miss. Can I interrupt you and tell you about this?
I had Chris Landry on my show, The Beer Garden, yesterday, and you've been on it several times. I had Chris on, and we were talking about the deal at LSU, and he goes through that day at – that last week of Les Miles, the year that they lost at Ole Miss and then they beat A&M, Les Miles had no idea, as he was being taken off the field by his players, that he was going to still be the coach at LSU the next day. And so, So they go into the following summer, after the offseason of fraud, they go into the following summer putting together a plan behind Les Miles' back for what they'll do as soon as they lose a game. They enact that plan. They go through the season. Joe Oliva believes first he has Jimbo Fisher. He finds out he doesn't. He believes he has Tom Herman. He finds out he doesn't. He gets up the morning after LSU's win at Texas A&M, calls Ed Orgeron at 5:30, and here's the deal. You're the coach, but we have to get this announced before Texas announces Herman. That's how petty. Imagine a decision like that going badly. Who in the world could have predicted it? The unbelievable thing to me, and I've said this, Chase is rolling his eyes right now. The most amazing thing to me is not that Ed Orgeron has failed again as a head coach. It is that Joe Oliva is still a gainfully employed athletics director. That's
remarkable. Yeah.
Boys and girls, if you're listening, don't give up. You can be an absolute moron, be terrible at your job, make one bad decision after another, cost your employer millions, and you can stay employed. Joe Oliva is a hero. He is the American dream. He is college football's version of, like, I guess, like welfare and food stamps. We're just gonna prop him up. This guy, it is totally his fault. Everyone in Baton Rouge is yelling about Ed Orgeron in the same way that everyone in Oxford yelled about Ed Orgeron. Ed Orgeron to this day has done nothing wrong. He's taken two jobs that he shouldn't have gotten, but they were offered to him, and he took them.
You know, it's amazing to me. So this is going to be kind of a convoluted way to get to my point, but stick with me, if you will.
Okay.
It's amazing to me the way these athletic directors panic. So I've got the LSU job, which by all accounts is a top 10 job in the country, right?
Yes.
And you're right. My first two options fall by the wayside. They say no. And these athletic directors, for fear of how they're going to be viewed publicly, panic. And that's exactly what Joe Oliva did. And he compounded his panic by being petty on top of that, like you said. I never understand that panic. Okay, you didn't get your first shot. You didn't get your second shot. If there is ever a lesson on why maybe you should just tap the brakes and wait, it's Alabama. And Alabama found this out accidentally. It's not because Alabama did it the right way. But when Alabama was trying to hire Nick Saban, Mal Moore wanted Nick Saban, and it was the only guy he wanted. And there were a lot of power boosters at Alabama that thought that was a pipe dream. So they go out on their own and convince Rich Rodriguez to take the job from West Virginia, to the point that Rodriguez agrees to take the job, then has second thoughts and spurns Alabama and stays at West Virginia. Alabama then is back to square one, which, by the way, was Nick Saban. And Mal Moore put his job on the line to be patient, and Saban finally said yes to him. So Nick Saban was Alabama's first choice, but it was not the first guy that got offered that job.
You know,
so my point in all of that is, why do you panic? Okay, why do you panic? Now, Alabama panicked and almost screwed it up. But in that screw-up, they showed if sometimes you'll just be patient, you'll get a good coach. You're LSU football. You're not going to end up with a bad coach unless you panic and make a bad hire, which is what they did.
It's funny. There was a columnist in Mobile who had talked to some Alabama power brokers who had said, hey, Nick Saban's not coming.
That was one of my favorite columnists, too, man. I miss that guy.
Yeah.
There's a really good cutting room floor column on Rich Rodriguez that happened one day, wasn't there?
Oh, there's a great meet your new head coach, Alabama. This is Rich Rodriguez. Have you ever heard of that story? Patrick, what's his name, Pat White? He was the quarterback at West Virginia. He was a Daphne kid.
Yeah.
And this was back when the Mobile Register just spent money. He was like, hey, we have some money. Let's spend it. And they flew me to Pittsburgh, and I drove down to Morgantown, and I spent all this time with Rich Rodriguez that summer doing a Pat White thing. And Rich Rodriguez on a Sunday decided to give his team a day off, and I'm there. And their SID, who at the time I think was Shelley Poe, who's now at Auburn, she called me and was like, hey, if you have time, coach has time. And I went and spent basically most of a Sunday afternoon hanging out with Rich Rodriguez. Had all of this stuff that I had no point for, no purpose for. And when he gets the Alabama job, I spend all night long writing that story, wake up the next morning, and he had, you know, his wife had changed her mind is what had happened. And it's always been fascinating to me what happens to Alabama football if Rich Rodriguez takes the gig.
Well, history would tell you he probably at some point wins 10 games. Everybody from Ryan on has won 10 games at one point. So, you know, he probably would have found some success. There is nobody alive, probably Rich and Rita Rodriguez themselves, that would tell you he would have had the same success that Nick Saban had. So Alabama would not be here today. And I don't think, you know, Rich Rodriguez might add some mild success, but I mean, basically, once he's gotten away from West Virginia, he's never been able to replicate that.
Houston,
Michigan or Arizona.
Houston Nutt would have won the SEC in 2009.
Wow.
Probably true.
Yeah.
That's a startling. You're right about that, though. He probably would.
They probably win the West, and then, yeah.
You're probably right.
Houston Nutt Sugar Bowl 2009.
Oh, God. He'd say, "Oh God!"
You think he was going to be Florida twice in 1 year?
Well, okay, fair enough. Well, no, that was 08. That was 08.
08.
Yeah,
yeah.
The next year is the year
that.
Yeah, yeah. The next year they finished second to Alabama in the West.
Yeah, I'll never forget the day Ole Miss beat Tebow in Florida. It was the blackout, the Alabama Georgia blackout game.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And I was on the campus in Athens, which is one of the great American landmarks, campus of the University of Georgia on a game day. And the cheer from whatever their common area is, the quad, whatever they call it, the moment Ole Miss got that stop on Tebow, the cheer sounded like a touchdown in Sanford Stadium. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever heard at a college campus. And this was hours before Alabama and Georgia kicked. I mean, this was that Bama-Georgia game was the night game on ESPN. And as I remember, that Florida-Ole Miss game was the JP early game.
Oh, yeah. It was the early game.
Yeah, that was crazy, man.
I can remember standing on the sideline in Florida as it finished just thinking, holy shit. Didn't see this coming. Ole Miss had lost to
Wake the week before.
Had lost to Wake the week before and would lose to South Carolina the following week. I mean, it was unbelievable. To this day, it's one of the most shocking. Yeah. And then
that's become an Urban Meyer staple a little bit, is just these random losses that, I mean, at least when Saban loses, most of the time you can kind of see it coming. It's like, well, at least that was a good team they lost to. I mean, you know, his losses have been LSU in the game of the century, Auburn in the kick six game, you know, Auburn with Cam Newton in the national championship. You at least kind of see those coming. Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M. You know, I mean, the Ole Miss losses are probably the most head-scratching losses. Those are pretty good Ole Miss teams. And, I mean, but with Urban Meyer, man, sometimes his losses, you're like, where did that come from? How in the world did he lose that game?
Yeah, at the time, Ole Miss was still a beaten-up team that didn't know how to win, coming off Orgeron, frankly. Now, at the end of the year, they were one of the best three or four teams in the country.
Absolutely.
But at that point in the year, yeah, they were still so mentally fragile, as evidenced by the game against Carolina the next week. So, anyway, whatever.
So, who wins, LSU or Florida?
To answer your question, Chase, I think Florida wins this game.
Yeah.
I'm the idiot that picked LSU.
Yeah, Neil was worried about the line all week, was trying to get it down, and then picks LSU, which I really didn't understand.
Well, my pick is because I think this is the one week where Ed Orgeron will be handcuffed, and I think Matt Canada will run his offense.
Florida is going to run the football a lot, right?
Okay. Yeah, because they have to, because they're down to one quarterback now.
All right, they're going to run the football a lot.
Yeah.
LSU, at this point, has played Troy, BYU, Chattanooga, Syracuse, and Mississippi State and managed to lose twice so far. And
what are you trying to say?
They've allowed 4.8 yards a rush against State and Syracuse to this point.
Just get to the point, Parham. What's the deal?
My point is that Florida and its Power 5 teams is better in every freaking stat.
Look, it was a bad pick, okay?
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, Jordan Chun just ran for 190 on them. Troy back. He'd gone over 100 yards once this year, and he put 190 on LSU.
Both of
Florida
you, shut
actually
up.
Found a way to run the ball against Vanderbilt, who's a pretty good defense. I think it's going to be an ugly game. I don't even know that you'll be able to watch it. Hey, we love hypotheticals on our show, and you guys will appreciate this. So here is the hypothetical my co-host Lance Taylor came up with.
Okay.
How watchable would this game become if Ed Orgeron came out and said, my $12 million buyout rides on this game? If I lose this game, you don't have to pay me $12 million to fire me. If I win this game, you have to pay me my $12 million right now and you can't fire me. how watchable does that game become at that point?
Oh, wow. That'd be like one of those old school wrestling matches, loser goes home.
Yeah. When his entire fan base is cheering for Florida that afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, the only people cheering for LSU are their players.
Yeah, Kelly Orgeron.
Instead of the Chinese Bandits, yeah, they're doing the chomp after all the.
Do you even think his players would try? I mean, that would be, you would see like so many missed tackles. Where you're like, whoa, that dude really whiffed on that.
Yeah, they get in the huddle and Geis looks over at Etling and goes, "Just be yourself. just." All right, I know you got to go fairly soon. We've run all over the place. Bama going to roll again, or does this have a chance to be at least somewhat close? And when I say somewhat close, I mean within 30.
Boy, this is a big number. Alabama's favored by 25 on the road in the SEC to a team that team that's a one-loss team. I was about to say, aside from one half, they play pretty good football. They really haven't, because they followed that up with two stinkers, too. That Texas A&M defense, they are so susceptible to the run. They've got maybe the best player in the SEC in Christian Kirk, but you got to find a way to get him the ball. Kellen Mond against that Alabama defense. Man, guys who make their first starts, young quarterbacks that make their first starts against the Saban coach defense, they do not fare well. So I can see some turnovers. And again, Alabama's just a team that doesn't really turn the ball over. That's a big number to cover. I would say Alabama wins somewhere 21-24. I don't think they'll cover the 25, but I'm not going to be shocked at all if they do. But to answer your question, I don't think it's going to be a terribly close game.
So this week, at least, who's the fifth best team in the SEC?
The three best to me are obvious. It's Alabama, Georgia, and Auburn.
And I'm putting Florida four just for the sake of the argument.
Yeah. No, I think you got to put Florida fourth. That's who I was going to put there. It may be Texas A&M.
Our poll earlier in the week was A&M State or Kentucky.
It just means more.
I can't go Kentucky. Since they lost to Florida, they embarrassed themselves against Florida, leaving guys uncovered for touchdowns. And since they lost that game, they have played awful against the Easterns, Eastern Kentucky, and Eastern Michigan, so it's not Kentucky. State has just had their doors blown off the last 2 weeks. I can't put them fifth. It's got to be A&M. And I have to hold my nose to make that pick, but I think they're the fifth best team in the league right now.
Yeah, really strange stat. I saw this from David Brandt, the Mississippi AP writer, yesterday. State's games this season, and obviously it's gone both ways. They've had blowouts. They've been blown out. The average margin of victory in their games is like 38 points this season.
Yeah, one way or the other, right?
Yeah.
One way or the other. They're either blowing out or getting blown out. It's been a weird season for them. I still, look, Jeffrey Simmons is a great player, so they've still got some pop defensively, and Fitzgerald against defense. Some defenses can be really, really good, but you've seen it. When you play at Georgia, you play in Auburn, and last year when he played Alabama, and the same may happen this year, he's not as good against really good defenses. He can look spectacular against average or bad defenses, but he can look really bad against good defenses, which is what's happened to him.
Last thing, are you starting to think Georgia's an actual contender, or is Georgia just the team that gets to line up and get whipped by Alabama in December? Is there any chance that by December Georgia's a team that will have a chance in that game?
Man, I just sat here in a state where a true freshman was within 2 minutes of winning a national championship, undefeated. So, freshmen aren't like they used to be. But Fromm hasn't looked as good as Jalen Hurts either. He's been good. He's not been great. As long as they're sticking with Fromm, and I guess the biggest nightmare is you're not sticking with Fromm, because then that means he has struggled and you've gone back to Eason, and who knows what you get there. So I guess the best-case scenario for Georgia is Fromm is starting against Alabama in or Auburn or whoever in an SEC championship game.
Alabama.
Georgia's got a championship defense. That defense, I heard that, yeah. That defense is that defense is championship level. I mean, it looks like what Kirby Smart was doing at Alabama. They've definitely got the run game. I'm just not ready to say Fromm could deliver in that situation. They're a contender because of the division they're in. I don't know who's going to beat them in that division. So I fully expect them to show up in Atlanta undefeated. I mean, that's my expectation for Georgia right now.
Yeah, it's mine too. They're legit on defense. They've got a shot to beat anybody not named Alabama or Clemson, I think. And I don't think they can't beat those teams.
The thing that's easy to forget, I would agree. The thing that's easy to forget for Georgia is there's always that triple option at the end of their schedule. And that's always that weird, it can level the playing field, that goofy triple option offense that you never have to defend except for one game a year. And they get an SEC game right before that. They get Kentucky right before that, I believe. So that could, that you always have to remember that with Georgia, that's always hanging out there at the end of the schedule.
Well, hey, I know you had a busy morning. Appreciate you taking some time. Look forward to talking to you again next Friday. The tension will be over. One of us will be happy. One will be devastated. We'll get together again then.
Well, Neil, you're a good friend. You know I love you, but I hope you have a miserable night tonight.
Likewise. It'll be fun. It'll be a fun series. I'll tell you this, whoever gets out of the National League, they're going to look at that behemoth in Cleveland and think, I don't know. Those cats are good, boy.
That's a tough bunch right there, buddy.
They are good.
I don't know anybody wants to be part of that.
Nope. All right, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, boys. Y'all be good.
Thanks, Ron, for joining us this morning. The podcast brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. You're getting local underwriting and understands your market. That's a pretty big deal. Trying to get certain things approved. Also the leader in condo financing in Oxford. So that's about the float down option, which we've used in picks the last couple weeks. Allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can find Jason at 662-234-2704 or JLOWE, that's JLOWE, at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also sponsored by State Farm agent Romero Miller, the former Ole Miss quarterback, longtime contributor to RebelGrove.com, can write insurance throughout the states of Mississippi and Tennessee. Contact Romero at RomeroMiller.com, on Facebook at Romero Miller State Farm, or by email at Romero@RomeroMiller.com. Romero Miller State Farm, located at 7164 Hacks Cross Road, Suite 119 in Olive Branch. The phone number is 662-893-1212. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. Currently, Ben Brown and his team are looking to hire part-time and full-time sales team members across Texas and the Southeast to join their team. They offer extensive training, support, and the best products and pricing in the industry. Whether you're looking to supplement your current income or find a better career opportunity, email Ben at benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com. They're looking for motivated individuals with some sales experience, a business degree, or those who are close to completing their business degree who have a passion to serve small business owners. They have an exceptional uncapped commission structure, and they are an equal opportunity employer. Email Ben today, benbrown@journeybizsolutions.com.
Seeing this on Twitter a second ago, and now I've kind of lost it. Let me find it again. It was a stat of how all the Astros who have faced Drew Pomeranz to this point have done against him. And at least five have double-digit at-bats against Drew this season. Four of the five having fared too well. Brian McCann in 11 at-bats, hitting 182. Beltran hitting 182 in 11 at-bats. Gattis 077 in 14 at-bats. Springer 125 in 16 at-bats. Then there's Altuve, 412 in 19 at-bats. 412.
I just wouldn't throw it out to me. I'd look at him and go,
Four.
Head on down to first. Have fun.
Feel free to try to steal second, too. It's fine.
Someone else will have to beat me.
Stay away from him.
Huge start for Drew. I will say this about Drew. I don't think the moment will intimidate him at all.
No. I'm interested. 105 game time, I think it's the early game again today.
Let's see. I'll tell you real quick.
Pretty sure.
The game schedule for today, Red Sox and Astros at 1. It's on FS1. Yankees and Indians at 4. That's on the MLB Network. Cubs and Nationals at 6:30. That's on TBS. And Diamondbacks and Dodgers after the Cubs-Nationals. That's also on TBS.
There was a report later in the day, I forgot the podcast yesterday, saying that North Carolina would not get their penalty sanctions today.
Yeah.
Scheduling conflicts and whatnot. was the way it was in, way it was presented.
Somebody leaked it, and the NCAA got their feelings hurt. And so they said, well, we're not going to do it this way.
You're going to wait another week.
You have to wait a week. We have rules. We have rules.
They're just guarding the game.
God, I hate them so much. Not because of the Ole Miss thing. It's stupid. It's just dumb. The rules are, the way they do this is so dumb. There's no reason, by the way, this should, two things. There's no reason an investigation should take 6 years, and there's no reason that there should be 8 weeks following the COI hearing.
No, there were days of deliberation given right after the thing to be used.
It's just bureaucracy. It's dumb. And I know everyone goes, well, it's the process. It works. Okay, just because something is a process doesn't mean it works. It's bad. It's flawed. I would like to, while I'm ripping college athletics, let Nebraska know again, I will take your job for $1 million. I can be there by Monday.
$1 million.
$1 million a year.
Could they get you down to 976?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to say that out loud. I can be there by Monday, and I'm ready to work. I'll put on a red sport coat, and I will go support the Huskers. I'll fire the coach that you want fired.
Mike Riley.
And I'll hire Scott Frost. That's who you want. I'll get it done.
Will you?
Oh, yeah. Fly to Orlando, sit down with Scott Frost, won't have to do any of that private stuff. We'll just walk right in. Scott, you want this job? Our people want you. Here's $4 million a year. Got a plane all gassed up.
Are you currently happy with Darren Erstad, or do you have to look into that a little
bit?
He's
fine for right now. Okay. We're fine. It's football. I know what pays the bills.
Who's their basketball coach?
I don't know.
Don't care.
I don't think it matters. Does it really matter? We're in Adidas school. He's probably arrested soon, so I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, Darren walks in, I go away. It's fine. Yeah. Whatever.
Darren will walk in, I'll say, hey, I remember watching you play. Are you good? Because I'm good with you. Are you good? Good. See you. Hey, tell Scott to come back in. You got everything you need? I didn't need to meet with you privately, but I need to meet with our 20 biggest boosters in private. Please.
No tape recorders, please.
Yeah. No phones. No recorders. Let's get a metal detector. Let's get this part ironed out.
Might be more important than actually talking to Scott.
Yeah. Well, I almost say to Scott is, are you good? Cool.
Did you read yesterday the Courier Journal report on all Jurich's perks?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now look, let me say something. That was an offer sheet that is at least comparable to most major Power 5 football coaches. It was.
Yeah.
However, the AD, and I get what he's done. He's brought them from small-level conference to Power 5 behemoth from a money standpoint.
Yes.
Paying him, grossing up his salary so they would pay his taxes for him, overpaying his life insurance so he would get the excess of it.
I think what's most important to remember in all of this is that we don't need to give the players a stipend. That's what's most important.
Millions of dollars. Millions. The only guy who was similar in pay for last year, now again, there was some stuff he had cashed out that made last year higher. However, the only dude in administrative for college that was close was the dude at Vanderbilt. But he's like also a law professor and also like a provost. Like he's like 10 different things because Vandy has either no athletic department or a really weirdly structured athletic department.
Yeah.
So he does a lot of different stuff. Might even be the president of the school for all I know. I don't know.
But I will say that I think everyone owes Rick Pitino an apology.
What?
Rick Pitino did not take all of the Adidas money. He left 2% of the Adidas money to be distributed elsewhere. And I thought that was big of him. And I'm prepared right now to formally apologize.
They got a 10-year, $160 million deal from Adidas, and Pitino left $1.5 million a year for 5 years.
He left $1.5 million. That's to be distributed. I mean, that is so magnanimous on his part. So I would like to formally apologize.
A lot of people out there are going to hate me when I say this.
They don't hate you.
I do get bugged a little bit, though, when the Courier Journal, I mean, great scoop, great story. And like the third paragraph does the, I mean, that's more money than they used to fund the English department. It's like,
well yeah, that's ridiculous.
Come on.
Come on.
When the English department is making $198 million, then we'll talk.
Yeah, that's that idealism. And I'm with you on the idealism stuff, but let's keep
Look, are they potentially making too much? Yeah, probably.
Yes.
Yes. But should it be distributed better?
Yes. Yes.
But the tenured dude that teaches con law shouldn't be making 4.3.
Here's the thing. Whether you think he should or shouldn't, whether you think we should or shouldn't, 25,000 people don't show up every Wednesday night and Saturday afternoon to watch the con law professor do his thing. Maybe they should. I'm not arguing that point. I'm not arguing that he's not a brilliant person who's far smarter than Rick Pitino and all of the cats down there on the sideline coaching basketball. I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that he's not having a bigger impact on lives than those people. I'm not disputing that. But the reality is, if you sold admission to his comm law class to observe, you would not sell 25,000 tickets. That's reality.
My favorite paragraph, Louisville interim president Greg Postel on Monday said Monday he's planning to learn more about the school's $160 million sponsorship extension. Thanks.
Attaboy.
Attaboy. Go learn more.
Joe Oliva says, hey, that's pretty sharp.
They've had a bad week. Got beat by NC State last night.
That doesn't even register on the badness of the week.
The only dude that's had a worse week is Chuck Person. See where his wife filed for divorce yesterday, or like a day after he got arrested?
Yeah, probably didn't.
Dude got arrested by the feds, and then his wife files for divorce the next day. Per Auburn Undercover, I'm assuming it's true.
True love.
Something.
Yeah.
His banner's still hanging up in Auburn Arena. I saw a picture of it a couple days ago.
Something tells me it's coming down.
You think so?
Yeah.
They're going to pull his banner now.
Yeah.
Do you just leave the little white spot where it was? Do you make Barclays twice as big to cover the area?
That might be the time to put the comm law class inside the arena and test it out because no one's coming to the basketball games.
Well, they can give the tickets back. They get the money back.
Man, they're.
Do you just find somebody else like, hey, Chris Porter, let's put his thing up.
Scott Pullman.
Mamadou Ndiaye?
Yeah.
I had a hard time spelling his name every time, I think. Just
you got used to
keyboard.
It. I can still do it. Mamadou, capital N, apostrophe.
Uh-oh.
Diaye.
Hang on, last name, what is it?
Capital N, apostrophe, small Diaye, Ndiaye, I think.
Oh, really? I think that's it?
Is that right?
I don't know. I'm having a hard time Googling. Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. I don't really care.
No, it doesn't matter.
Are you doing it, though?
Matters to Mamadou Ndiaye.
Are you looking it up?
Yeah, I'm going to see.
He's the name that sticks out when I used to listen to basketball games back then.
Great guy.
For some reason, that's the one name that sticks out.
Yeah.
You got it right?
Yeah, I got it right. Sure did.
Do you have a name now that you have a hard time spelling or just doesn't come off your keyboard right? You have to always kind of hit backspace because you don't hit the...
Dominic Olenichuk.
Is that the one?
I'm getting it. I'll have it. I'm about got it where I'm down now, where I don't have to look at it. Eustace Firmenovicius was...
Firmenovicius.
Yeah, and then they have a guy named Ilya Tetris something that I...
No.
I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do with that.
Not there yet?
Not yet.
Okay. All right, we will talk to you on Monday. This is the end of the week. Ole Miss Auburn, 11 a.m., Jordan-Hare Stadium, Saturday from the Plains. So we'll have content there. Again, a lot of podcasts. The recruiting podcast is up, as well as the Beer Garden. So check out rebelgrove.com. More content coming throughout the day leading up to Ole Miss and Auburn. Talk to you on Monday.